Welcome back to the Finding Flow podcast. I just want to take a quick second to thank our sponsors, the Inflow Wellness Academy, located in Plymouth, Michigan. They offer some amazing services that can help you better achieve these states of flow by optimizing your health and your wellness. Their services include personal training for general population, for athletes, for just about anybody. They offer pain modalities like massage therapy, laser therapy, yoga, durability classes, and they're experts in nutrition and supplementation. So if you're really looking to take your health and your body and your wellness to the next level, that's the place to be. That's the place to seek out. You can find them at inflowacademy.com. You can find them on Facebook and YouTube at Inflow Wellness Academy and on Instagram at Inflow Academy. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get the ball rolling.
Everything changes.
What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Finding Flow podcast. Today we got an awesome episode we're very excited about. I'm Kevin Lowers.
I'm Ben Knapp.
And who are we here with today, man?
We are here with a friend of ours and a patron of Inflow Wellness Academy, the president and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Mr. Nick Hopwood.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for joining us, Nick. Awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome. It's exciting. He actually was listening to our podcast, and I think Nick is a wealth of information and logic, and he actually, I'd like for him to just take maybe a quick minute and tell us about kind of what you do and how you are helping advancing the human potential.
Well, most importantly, I was listener number 7 of the Finding Flow podcast.
Out of a million. Pretty good.
Yep. So right out of the gate. Secondly, I'd like to think that I was the inspiration for this podcast because my podcast is called Finding True Wealth, and you guys went with Finding Flow. Mm-hmm. So would you like to comment about that?
Absolutely no influence.
I think we would have nothing to say about
that.
We
were completely original in our thought process.
Yeah, and I'd like to think so.
I didn't even think about you at any point.
And you got to think, at my age, I have so much amnesia to where I wouldn't have remembered that anyways.
I can attest to that for sure.
He really does
for me. Well, I do really dig the name, Finding Flow, Inflow, and I was thinking about changing our name from Peak Wealth Management to Peak Flow Wealth Management.
I think he's starting to buy into the concept living more in flow.
Hey, yeah, man, it's a lifestyle.
I am living in flow, no doubt.
Well, we do have, we did bring, you know, we obviously, you know, Kevin and I, you know, me and you, we sit around and we basically just use this podcast to kind of just like elaborate on some thoughts and have conversations. And I really hope we can, you know, really, create a really quality point with what we're trying to do today. And Nick has a very cool way that he helps people and supports people in their growth and helps them, you know, elicit their best potential when it comes to their retirement and their lifestyles and how he tries to in a more financial way, how he tries to help them create more financial flow. And so I'm appreciative for not only this guy's extremely reputable, he's extremely successful, he's a great family man. And so having his, not only having his business here at Inflow, but having his insight and his input on what I think is a really, really important topic, I think we're lucky to have him here. So the topic that we really do want to discuss today is how much is enough, okay? You know, what does it mean to have enough? What does it mean to, you know, when are we allowed to be content? When are we allowed to wake up in any individual day and actually be comfortable with where we're at? You know, it seems like, you know, a lot of people, you know, they talk about guilt and anxiety. You know, guilt is the thoughts of the past and anxiety is the thoughts of the future, right? And so when we're trying to help people achieve more flow in their life, we're trying to help people, you know, again, it's about, you know, what is a flow? What is the ebbs and flows? In other words, there's going to be some high moments and some low moments, right? So we just try to give people, you know, useful tools on helping, you know, deal with some of the low times and how to really acknowledge and embrace the good times. But, you know, we can learn from both. You know, we can learn from, I think you learn more probably from, you know, when stuff isn't going very well. You know, it creates that opportunity to find another way. And so, I think he's spot on with how he deals with his clients, and we want to find out a little bit more about him and how he helps his clients achieve financial flow. So
financial flow, I think maybe I should coin that one too. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, I think like finances is one of the main pillars in life and happiness. So it fits right into the paradigm, right next to health, you know. And you know, you give people the opportunity to actually have control over that. So
what would you say about that? Like if you were gonna say top three most important things that that you like to be prepared for and consider the most important things in life, what would they be?
Like today's day, not like medieval times.
Yeah, right now,
okay,
man.
Yeah,
no,
like right now. I mean, when I think about a lot of my talking points, such as finding true wealth and being prepared financially, it comes back to security. Just like you want to feel safe, you know, when you're walking down the street or in your house, when you're going to sleep at night, you want to have that financial security. So it all starts right there. Like Kevin and I were talking a few minutes ago, you know, at some point you go from worried about the bills each month, right? And so you have to get past that so you feel that financial security before you can start saving and investing for the future. So I think, you know, a lot of times people take it for granted if they're doing well, but at some point it starts with security. Okay. That's number one.
Cool. So what do we do? How do you create like a measurement? You know, in other words, like if I walked into your office today and I want to do some investing with your company, like how do you help me like measure where I'm at? You know, what, and then how do we, you know, again, so what are we determining about where I'm at today? Like, are we worried about what got us to this point? Do you use the past to help identify better, you know, because what if I had, I didn't think I had enough, but you said, well, you know, based on averages, you're a little bit ahead of the game. Do you help people like on their day one with their understanding of where they're actually at? Because, you know, maybe people have it the other way. Maybe they're too comfortable in a position where they really shouldn't be. You know, maybe they have not a very healthy debt to credit ratio. So how do you start?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, most people have no idea where they stand relative to their long-term goals. And I try to ask them, what's important to you, right? Is it, you know, is it retiring early? Is it making sure your kids can have, no student loans going to school? Or is it, you know, just getting out of debt, right? What's the most urgent and what's the most important thing in your life? And how can money be a tool to help you reach those goals? So we start there with the goals, and then we take in, like you were saying, an inventory. So I want to talk to you about your balance sheet first of all. You know, what are your assets? Is it a house, bank, 401k, you know, a business, rental real estate, vehicles? You know, what are your assets and what are your liabilities? Credit cards, mortgages, home equity lines, other car loans, stuff like that. And let's take an inventory and see a snapshot. And then let's talk about income, because, you know, you have to be able to have positive cash flow.
Boom.
In order to
plug.
Put it away for the future. If you don't have cash flow, then you're just always going to be treading water and worried about security. So we have to find a way to have positive cash flow and then be smart enough to make good decisions to save that cash flow.
How much, like, I would imagine that you deal with a lot of psychological factors, kind of like we do similarly, you know, like getting people out of these bad habits is probably like very important for you, right? So what do you do to go about that, you know, kind of shape-shifting people's habits?
Right.
How do you
so
coerce
like,
them into that?
So like a few minutes ago, we were watching Ben train some people, right?
He looks great on the floor, by the way.
He does. I like his shirt.
Thank you.
Fits perfect.
Professional. Fills it out.
But, right, he's doing some talk therapy out there every day, and he's doing most of the talking. Hopefully people are listening. But it's a form of counseling, a form of talk therapy, and I do the same thing. Sometimes, you know, I get stuck playing marriage counselor. But if people are making bad decisions with their money, I'm trying to figure out why. You know, like the therapist would be trying to figure out what happened to you to make you behave this way. Same kind of thing. And oftentimes they get their idea about money from when they were a child, what they saw their parents do, or what they heard their parents or family do with money, and it formulated their beliefs. And sometimes it's great, sometimes it's terrible. And when I reflect on my own experience, I witnessed people making bad decisions that are close to me. And so I believe that's my why I do what I do. I do what I do to help you guys not be making the same poor decisions that I witnessed as a kid.
Cool. I have a couple of questions about that. First, one of the first things you said was most people don't know. In other words, you know, if they have security, it's a false sense of security. If it, maybe they have enough, but they're worried that they don't. So they. So in other words, on you know, a lot of day ones, I think every day is kind of a form of a day one. So if people don't know on day one, we talked a little bit before we started the podcast about how each day we wake up, we're experiencing advancements. We're experiencing, you know, technological boosts. We're experiencing new ways of you know, we're helping to feed the world now. You know, there's less disease now. That's why we've come up with clean water and clean heat. You know, so people don't die from, you know, famine anymore. Well, I mean, I'm sure it does happen, but it happens less. So we're getting better. So you had said our parents are our best, are our initial teachers. Mm-hmm. So is that information outdated, or what is? How do you create that scale? Like, I mean, is every day does the scale change? Do you change and modify your scales, or is as it is as it always has been, is as it always should be?
There's both. Like Kevin was saying, can I call you K Love, by the way?
You can call me whatever you want, man.
So K Love was like, you know, I got this ETF account set up, and I use that for this and that. Well, ETFs didn't exist 25 years ago,
okay.
Right? So there's always things evolving in that area. But the human nature is still the same, you know? So the lessons that we learn about saving and spending and investing, those are the same from, you know, 100 years ago. But ETFs didn't exist then, so the vehicle might be different.
Okay. But the process is pretty similar.
Yeah, the process is going to be similar throughout. And you said, you know, people don't know. And it's so true. Just yesterday, I'm meeting with a client, and they bring in nothing, okay? So, Ben, how much is your 401k worth? Because I don't handle the 401k. It's with your company. Oh, I don't know. Ben, how much are you adding to your 401k? Ah, I can't remember. How much is the match? How much is your mortgage? You know what? I think it was like 122. Well, was it 122 or 222? And you wouldn't believe how far off people are. So they really don't know where they stand. And, you know, you hear people say that quote, how do you know where you're going to go if you don't know where you are today? And it's so true with financials. And people really don't know. And so that's why I recorded one of my podcasts, Track Your Expenses and Net Worth. Every month, you should be writing down in a Google Sheet, it's in the cloud, so you don't lose the data, your expenses and your income, so you see if you have a positive month for cash flow. And then the other tab should be your net worth. Each month, what's your portfolio, your real estate, your property, and your debt. You know, we should see your assets climbing because you're saving, and we should see your liabilities declining because you're paying them off. And so each month you have progress, and I've been doing that for 10 years.
Do you have your clients do that same thing? Like, do you have your own Excel sheet that you give to them?
I have a template that's baked into my podcast show notes.
What's the name of your podcast?
Finding True Wealth.
Finding True Wealth. You can get that on the Podbean.
It's on Podbean. Yeah.
Okay.
So cool. You can
it's on iTunes
in,
too, right?
It's on iTunes as well.
Cool.
So I have my template out there. And Ben, yes, I recommend it. It almost comes up in every meeting, okay? But just like blueprinting, you know, my blueprinting process, probably only 10% of the people or less will actually do it.
Okay.
Because it's work. But it's only like 1 hour a month.
It's amazing what just like, because you can get into a state where you're just blindly not thinking about it anymore, and then that can like lead you down a bad rabbit hole, right? I've disciplined myself. It's taken me a lot of mistakes to do it, but you know, I track all my expenses and all my profits, and like just writing it down and thinking about it I think can have like a pivotal change. And I mean, we do it with people's meals, you know, like it's funny the other day, one of our clients walked in with her meal plan, you know, all like proud that she, you know, wrote down and tracked her meals, and
yeah.
Ben grabbed it and just ripped it in half right in front of her.
Why'd you do that?
Because we don't care about what you're eating. I mean, we do to an extent. It's not like you shredded it. We were speaking to still read it, but it's more about just creating the habit of like being aware of what you're eating and writing it down. Like that's the power that begins the change, right? What you're eating is kind of obsolete to the habit, right? So I would say the same thing's true, because I can attest to that for sure. Just writing things down and being aware of like the debt you're in, or you know, the amount of money that you currently have, or the cash flow. It's almost like when I wasn't doing it, I would have this like looming anxiety, because I'm by no means financially secure. You know, I'm 1 month into starting a business alongside you. And I've kind of made that decision that it's going to take me, you know, years to build this business, to build assets. You know, I'm 24, so I got a lot of time, I hope. Knock on wood, we don't have any wood here. But when I wrote all that stuff down, even though it wasn't, like, pretty to look at, it, like, all, like, most of that anxiety just went out the window, because at least I had, like, it in my hands. I had a grasp on what I had to do. And then you obviously, I'm sure you can talk more to this, but creating, like, a plan to resolve it, right?
Yes. Now, you know, sometimes writing it down, taking that inventory of, how many credit cards do I really have with the balance, and what is the total? Right, I don't want to know.
Yeah,
It's like taking that cold shower.
It's like blood work.
Yeah,
nobody goes and gets blood work because they don't want to know.
Yeah, I'll take more cold shower. I'll take a cold shower every day instead of that shit.
Yeah, Ben, I'm sure my cholesterol is fine. I took a cold shower today.
Yeah, right.
Did you take the cold shower before the test or after the test?
Instead of the test.
Yeah, right.
But writing it down, though, very important.
Well, I was going to ask, like, people sometimes, I think it's important that, you know, I don't like people to describe themselves, like if they're giving their opinion on something, to describe yourself as what you're not, okay? So we're a gym, all right? So we have people that have this preconceived notion on what a gym is. Oh, so you guys do Zumba, or you guys do boot camps. And, you know, I remind them, you know, just a little process of, you know, we control the master switch. It really is, it's about you, but you're accepting our philosophy on how to get more well, okay? So it's almost like you have to deconstruct people's, you know, preconceived notions, you know, to build them for a new way of thinking and a new habit. So do you deal with that sometimes? You know, kind of, you have some people that are know-it-alls and are maybe there seeking counsel against that's maybe counter to what they think is a good way of going about it? In other words, is there people that just aren't good for you?
Yeah, there's people where it's a bad fit. Like, they don't value your advice. They think they know it better. So it's just not gonna work.
So we're not boot camp. Yeah. You're not a day trader.
Correct.
So I remember the first time I met you, I asked you a question. I said, if I handed you, say, 25 grand today and just said, I don't care if I lose it, be as aggressive as you want, make me as much money in 6 months, what would you say? Do you remember what your answer was?
Go check out E-Trade, probably.
You said we're not a good fit. And that was pretty cool to me. And that's how I knew that, you know, that I liked this guy, because he had, you know, he had a framework. He knew what he wasn't, okay? But he identifies himself as what he is, okay? So he doesn't spend time talking about why E-Trade is bad and why Scott Trade is bad. He just said, I've had success with this model, and this is what I believe in. So, you know, I'm a Kevin and I, we kind of fly by the seat of our pants. I say probably more me than Kevin. He's trying to be more structured in his life. So, you know, how do you deal with a guy like me who, you know, trust your advice and everything like that, but you have a lot of those questions, a lot of the longevity questions, like, you know, how much do we want to leave for our children and things like that? What if I'm not worried about that? You know, I just like, I, you know, I'm a belief guy. I'm a manifestation guy. I believe that even my business, I don't have it all figured out, but I know it's going to be great because I've dreamed it's going to be great. You know?
As long as you're hanging with KC, you're all good, man. I would say, fill out the blueprinting book, help you understand what's important to you. And there's no right or wrong answer. And you don't have to share it with anyone, not even Renee. You can just keep it to yourself, or you can share it with her, or whatever you feel like. But if you have $25,000 and you want to invest it aggressively and you like the idea of buying stocks and being active and trading it, well, that's great. But I'm not going to be the one to help you with that $25,000. I can be the financial planner, where I can say, here's what you have today. here's what you want to be later. How are we going to get there? And when you walk out the door from my office, you'll know, hey, I'm on track. Everything I'm doing is going to work. In other words, if I keep doing the same thing for the next 10 years, how is it going to look? And it's either going to look good or you're going to have to make changes. And so when you walk out, you'll know what those changes are if they're required.
Yeah, you probably bring people back to earth real quick.
Yeah,
I would imagine
it's painful for me at times, you know, to try and evaluate this analysis, and it's not looking good, and so I have to deliver the bad news. Caleb, as a result of bad decisions over 30 years, you're gonna have to work till you're 70.
Yeah. Well, good thing I like my job.
Well, that's the new thing. Like, people are retiring and then they're going back to work. Something that is more of a hobby that they can get paid for, or maybe they're volunteering. They're doing something that's not at the beach all day or.
Yeah, I would imagine it's got to be very similar to like how we deal with people. You know, it seems like people that kind of have, like, if you're actively taking care of your health and you're like, you're one of those, you know, motivated people, you're probably also actively trying to take care of your wealth. You know, whereas
health yields wealth.
Yeah, whereas, like, you know, you get people that just are kind of avoiding everything, including their health and their wealth and their relationships. And it's just kind of like it's all grouped together. It's almost like it's a personality trait. Like, yeah. Some people have the personality trait to just be very self-motivated to being on top of their life. Because, again, like, if you look at anxiety, you can always bring it back. Like, the suffering, the amount of people suffering from anxiety, and then from my own, like, you know, witnessing of this, it always almost seems like people are just avoiding things that, like, are very important, you know, and it's easier than ever to do that with things like social media. You know, you just blindly fill your brain with dopamine looking at useless shit all day, you know, instead of actually facing, like, tasks that are going to actually move you forward in life but are tough to, you know, come to that realization with. So it's interesting how the dynamic of health and wealth are probably like the two most important things to keep you from that angst, you know, like.
It's like security, right?
Exactly, 100%.
You want to feel secure financially, and, I look at that as the foundation, and health is the foundation of basically everything else in your life. And I think there's a very high correlation between health and wealth, and that's why I like to say health yields wealth.
I believe that. I've read a lot of Tim Ferriss's work. Are you familiar with Tim Ferriss?
Yeah,
you know, and
yeah.
He has that Tools of Titans book, and he's done hundreds of podcasts. But the similarities amongst the highest performers in the world, whether they're like a pianist or a pro athlete or a hedge fund manager, is like most of them have some sort of gratitude meditation practice. You know, most of them like follow a schedule and are organized. They all have some sort of health and exercise routine. They all have good sleep patterns. You know what I mean? So it's like,
they all read books, and
exactly.
And they all believe in God.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. You know, because the unpredictable part of the, you know, quote, future, right? I think this is the first generation that they said may not outlive their parents. I don't know if that's the one we're in or the one that's coming. So our life expectancy is actually, for the first time ever, it dropped down a couple of years, you know. At least that's what I've read. So, but it's interesting. So to me, again, we're talking about how much is enough. So,
wait, is that today's topic?
How much is enough?
Okay.
but my question to you would be, you know, let's say, you know, again, I'm predicting, maybe I have no children and I'm working on the average human life expectancy of X. And so you're going to help me try to get to that moment and still have something to deal with. Well, how are you prepared for untimely bad circumstances, whether it's a car accident, it's a disease, it's a death in the family? Like, do you have, does that change the vehicle at all? Like, does unexpected things that happen in life, how does that influence your model? How does that influence really what role that you play?
Well, it's the first thing you look at in that. If you can picture a pyramid, right, the foundation is having that emergency reserve, for instance, 6 months of your take-home pay or six months of your cost of living in case something like that occurs, followed by life insurance, disability insurance, you know, having these things here in the case of a tragedy.
Okay, so you advise even those things too?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're not picking stocks, you're
nope.
You're picking plans.
Yeah.
You're creating a life plan.
I pick a plan off the shelf and I...
And you hand it over.
I hand it over, yeah.
But I would imagine it's still, because again, we're living longer. So how has the model changed? Because we now have to predict for where 30, 40 years ago we were predicting for 60 to 65, and now we're predicting for 80 to 85. So how has that influenced the model?
Well, I could only comment on the last like 18, 20 years since I've been a professional, but and I think in that time frame, the life expectancy has been in the mid 80s, roughly. So I've seen products change, right, and different philosophies around products, like how to use life insurance, how to use long-term care insurance, but nothing really dramatic. Okay. Nothing terribly dramatic.
So no matter what, even with uncertainties, you basically stay in your lane. You know, so you can't always have a plan for a volcano, you know,
right,
or a hurricane or natural disasters. You know, I would imagine financial planners are scrambling down in Key West when that hurricane was coming. You know,
yeah, in 2006 there was a hurricane that came through Florida, and we had like just bought a condo in Marco Island, and I talk about this on your second home, the anti-dividend. Okay, but literally a couple months after we closed on that place, there was a hurricane that came through. And I was like staying up all night on CNN watching, you know, the coverage of the hurricane. And it was very stressful, but thankfully nothing happened to our unit. But in hindsight, knowing what happened with the value of that property, we would have been better off if the hurricane just demoed it. Yeah. Just cashed that insurance check.
How do you deal with people that are maybe getting closer to, again, what we're thinking is kind of like the end of life, or at least the end of this life, depending on what you believe in or whatever. Do they worry less, or are they still just as worried as they were 20 years ago? Like, how do you help people shape shift their worry? Like, if I'm 82 years old and I'm breathing, you know, partial oxygen, and I still have worry, how would you?
Okay, so when you say worry, I assume that you're thinking about the markets go down, we lose money. I'm worried about losing my portfolio.
If you watch the frickin' news, dude, you're worried every day. You know.
Yeah. First of all, I counsel people not to watch the news.
Perfect. That's one answer right there.
Just read the Wall Street Journal if you want some financial news. You're good. Okay. But it all starts with how much risk you're willing to take, right? So K-Love here, this young buck, right? He's not interested in investing conservatively. Right, he's probably interested in making as much as he possibly can, and he's probably willing to take some risk in order to get that reward. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Right. So with someone like that, you know, they can be aggressive, and they should be able to sleep fine even if the portfolio goes down 20%, because now they're thinking, I can invest more at a discount. But the 82-year-old guy who's breathing oxygen, I think that he would be in answering these risk questionnaires a little bit differently. He's probably saying something like, well, Nick's done my analysis for my retirement plan, and we determined that if I make 4% on my money, I'm good. I can meet every goal that I have for myself and my family, so I don't need to reach for a risk for those bigger returns, because I don't want to deal with that anxiety, that worry that you're talking about. We call this the family index. So if this guy's family index is 4%, the index number is the percentage return you need to earn. Well, we can make 4% with taking less risk, I believe. Nothing's guaranteed, but I believe that to be true. And so if the market drops a lot, you would be somewhat insulated because you're taking less risk.
Yeah, if we have, Kevin and I would agree, if we have an athlete that comes in here and is trying to maybe make the next team or maybe, you know, get into college or something like that, you know, we pin our ears back and we hit them with everything, right?
Absolutely.
That's fair. Yeah. Because why? Because they're young, they're fresh, they want it. You know, okay, so, but then let's say they've made the team, they played college ball for 4 years and they don't go pro. We modify their training, assuming they're still training with us. Now all of a sudden the training is, we can be a little looser with our program design. We can not have to worry as much about getting them, you know, game ready, you know, when they have to go back to their team in September or whatever. and then that person's 45, the scale continues to change. Because now all of a sudden we're no longer worried about our biceps and our six packs. Now we're just like, I don't want to hurt, you know, I want my back to feel better. So again, we modify. So how we would deal with somebody at 15 and how we would deal with somebody at 55, although it's the same idea, be a better version of yourself tomorrow than you are today. But again, our vehicle can change. Our attention to detail doesn't have to be, you know, as sharp. It doesn't have to be a razor, you know. So do you have, in other words, can you allow people to take, you know, more risk, you know, based on that kind of a model? You know, like I want to open a business and I'm ready to cash in all my inheritance to make this business work. Is that something that you can you still facilitate, you know, things like that? Does that work for you?
I would kind of draw the parallel back to that risk conversation, right? That younger athlete, right, you know, the younger investor, they want to be all in, right? They want to get the best performance possible at any cost. Whereas, you know, well, you might still feel that way at 45, but, you know, the 65-year-old family, right, their mindset is completely different. In the gym, it's more maintenance and mm-hmm. and
longevity, not performance.
But it's the same thing with the money. You want that longevity risk to be gone. So if you're invested too aggressively and we have some rocky roads, you can take a big hit and then be in a position to actually run out of money in retirement. So we want to be more in that maintenance plan, more in that longevity plan.
Well, this is a question for all of us. You know, I know the stock market runs in cycles, and so, you know, we had a crash, what, back in 2008? So based on where we're at today, we historically, well, we're within 5 to 10 years, right? You know, so my question is for all of us is, why is loss so devastating? Why are people so devastated by things that are almost predictable?
Because it's the same reason why people aren't planning with their money. They're not paying attention. They're not aware. They're just like, you know, I guess you could say living in the moment's very important, but like to a certain extent, you got to be thinking about things in the future, right? I don't think enough people do that. I don't think enough people pay attention. You know what I mean? I mean, I can attest to that for a lot of my own generation, like the younger generations, you know.
Well, we drink, we party.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what's
we're not
what's
considering our liver health.
Yeah, well, what's important to you, you know?
Liver rejuvenates, man.
Yeah. There you go. Every 7 years, that's a great philosophy.
So just take 7 years off, like every 7 years, just crush your liver, take 7 years off.
So let me ask you the question then. Back in 2008,
I'll be 45 in 7 years.
So 2008 came around. I mean, people that weren't paying attention lost over 50% of their
59%.
59 was the I knew the number was close. And some people lost more because maybe they were more aggressively set up. So that's obviously a devastating loss.
It is,
so
yeah.
So do you? Are you prepping people for this downturn? Are you prepping people for the almost absolute guarantee of a dip? Like,
I don't think Coach Ben is understanding what I said a few minutes ago.
I think
I'm going to bring it back to that same risk, right? That same family index number, right? So the guy who's 82, right? He doesn't want to lose 59%. No one does, right? But if he's invested at a level that is matching up with that return that he needs. He's
at 4%.
Yeah.
But the loss can still be 50% on a 4%.
Let's just say that a portfolio with a 4% return expectation is a blended, we'll say 40-60, 40% equity, 60% in bonds. Okay, if we have a recession, the 40% that's in the stock market is going to get hammered. In the average recession, we have a 20%, 25% market drop. So that 40% is going to drop. But the 60% in the bonds, this is your more conservative allocation. It's like the life preserver that holds your head above water in that recession. And so some of these could even make money during the recession. Some of them will lose just a little bit. So that's the idea, is that 40% is going to lose a lot. The 60% is going to hold you up. And at the end of the day, your plan is unchanged. So even in the eye of the hurricane, right, the eye of the storm, when you're looking at your statement, some people don't open their statements, by the way, in those times, just like writing things down. You need to open your statements you're going to be like, okay, well, I'm down X percent, and what's my reaction? Well, I can pull it out, right? Or I can buy more.
There you go.
Like if you're the young guy. Or you can say, I'm not going to panic. I'm going to call Nick. I'm going to reevaluate my long-term plan. And most likely, you're going to find that that long-term plan is unchanged. You're still legit.
So what are we doing to help prepare people for the certainty of aging?
I think we can dial both examples back to like what's within your control and what's not. You know, what's not in your control is what the market does. What's in your control is if you decide to be an adult about it and consult obviously your financial advisor and you know make good decisions within the chaos. Right.
Yeah. And so you can't control the market, but you can control how much exposure you do have to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just like we can, you know, like people can control the decisions they make on a day-to-day basis to impact their long-term health and their aging process. I mean, we know for a fact that you can influence your aging process. I mean, we all know a 60-year-old that didn't take care of themselves and a 75-year-old that did. And the 60-year-old looks like they're going to die at any moment. The 75-year-old looks like they have another 30 years to live. You know, so like we know good habits, good nutrition, good lifestyle, good sleep, good exercise is going to make you, obviously, if you develop, you know,
it's going to increase your chance.
It's going to increase. Yeah, there's always the variable. Again, and that's – it's there's so much, like, beauty to be found in that what's in your control and what's not kind of ideology, right? Like, because you can filter that through anything, and it can make your life better. Like, I think we've talked about it on here, but, you know, like, people that get mad at the weather, that's like getting mad that the market's crashing. You know, it's –
well,
it's delusional.
Why is it not 50 degrees yet, man?
Yeah.
It's March 22nd.
I'm supposed to be golfing. They said it was spring 2 days ago, and it was 10 degrees.
I swung my clubs yesterday. Yeah. Make my back sore. Well, that's where, you know, and that's what, to me, finding, for me personally, my life has definitely followed no blueprint whatsoever. And so, for me, because I think the way my mind works and, you know, people ask me what my business plan is, and I said, hope and a smile. That's my business plan. Well, that doesn't work for a bank. You know, if I'm going to ask a bank for $100,000 to, and they say, okay, well, show me your plan. I'm like, my plan's my hard work. My plan is my joy. My plan is my love. Or they're like, next.
Yeah.
Okay. But I think about like, you know, David, King David wrote the Psalms while he was in prison. You know, Marcus Aurelius wrote philosophy, Stoic philosophy while he was in prison. And then both of them became kings. They became very powerful men.
Well, he wrote a lot of that when he was king, which is even more impressive.
Yeah. So that's my thing is like, well, that's what finding flow means to me is I want to be prepared for absolute catastrophe as well as, you know, monetary growth and more comfort and more, because it seems to me, they say, you know, people always like to complain about rich people, but they're the most charitable people in the world. They've created more for other people than the people that are complaining about ever recognize, you know? Yeah, you can hate the CEO for Coca-Cola because of how much he makes, but the guy employs 100,000 people worldwide. I mean, like, give them a little credit for it. So,
and a lot of those people like work their asses off. You know, it's like some people for sure are born into wealth and are, you know, terrible with it. But I think most, that's something that was a harsh realization with me. Like, I'll use the lens of athletics. You know, you see these pros and you just think, oh, they're just naturally innate talent. You know, they're just better than everybody. But no, then you get to the root of it. Most of them just worked at it 4, 5, 6 hours a day from the time they were 4 years old and on. And that's the manifestation of that hard work, you know. But you had said something to me before the podcast, you know, we were talking about kind of those the index funds and where we're at with the business. And I think, like, betting on yourself is very important, you know. Like I have these conversations with my dad all the time. He's pretty conservative about everything. And he thinks, like, because he thinks – he takes what I make today and just thinks that this is my life. Like, I'm making this much money today, so this is what I'm going to make for the rest of my life. And I've never thought about it like that. I've always been in, like, the mindset of, like – how can I make more money? And then again, like, it's very important, which I've learned in the last few years, is like you should still be optimizing every aspect, right? I should still be trying to budget and be intelligent with my money while simultaneously trying to make more money.
Yeah, isn't it the same thing? Isn't it the same thing? Make more money or need less money?
Exactly. And like when you combine them, it's like a powerful.
Small houses are beautiful, man.
Yeah, I love. I've gotten really good, as I was joking with my parents the other day, I'm like, I'm really good at being poor.
Yeah.
I think I'm one of the best poor people you'll ever meet. Like, I feed my family healthy meals. Like, my bills get paid. My kid has a happy life. Like, and I would I would consider myself like a pretty poor person right now. But it's a year into starting a business. I was making a ton of money at my last job and was miserable. So I made a decision. I was like, I would rather be making a quarter of this money and be happy, you know, and work towards something that I can actually get behind. And
then, so it almost seems like, you know, before we invest, before we train, before we get a job, maybe we all need to do a certain amount of like therapy to really evaluate, you know, what is life? Again, what is enough? So, you know, I love that question. You know, we had a very good friend, I mean, one of the best humans I've met, at the age of 33, have a heart attack and basically be diagnosed with a failing heart. I mean, and so that was very alarming to me, which is really what kind of provoked this conversation that we're having today. Like, how much is enough? Like, even while we're preparing for the future, how much time are we spending preparing for the what-if scenarios? Is that a part of any of our blueprints? You know, I don't give a fuck. I mean, is that allowed to be 10% of our pie? Is there allowed
I'll bleep,
to be,
I'll bleep it out.
You know, I allowed to be 10% seat of my pants? Is there, if it creates comfort in the day, because again, there's so much uncertainty, there's gotta be an economic crash because history says it is. I'm gonna die because that's what we're all born to do. Live a short existence, learn a few examples, and pass on, and hopefully we move on to the next dimension. So that's the whole question. Like, when is enough enough? Like, when do we tell people to stop freaking worrying? You know, when do we tell people, spend some of your money, you've earned it? You know, can you do that? Can we tell people to eat gluten?
I have a couple thoughts. So Kevin was talking about being poor and happy, right? So I think that it only takes a certain amount of money to actually be happy. And then the more money buys you less and less happiness units, if that makes sense. The law of diminishing happiness, if you will. Okay. So you could make $1 million a year or even Bill Gates money and not necessarily be happy. You could be miserable, you know, with the money. And you could be perfectly happy with a low income. It's what you make of it. So the pursuit shouldn't be always after more money. It should be after that balance that can give you happiness. Now, how much is enough? Okay, so, you know, I often find myself thinking, you know, if I had X amount, you know, then I could just ride, you know, sail away, right? Like my old company, LPL, the founder, Todd Robinson, sold like 40% of the company for billions of dollars, and he was never seen again. The guy was gone, a permanent sabbatical, like on his yacht, like sailing around the Cape of Africa, you know, just gone. And I just find myself thinking about that kind of stuff every now and again. What if you won the $441 million lottery that is, you know, that's out there for this week? Well, you know, if you're driven, you know, it's not going to stop you. You know, you're going to do what makes you happy. And it's not going to be just being on the sailboat every day. You're going to have to do other things to be happy. What drives you? What's that meaningful purpose? What are your values? What's your mission? What are your goals? You know, is your goal just to get a lot of money in the bank, right? No, the goal is to live a rich life, not be rich. You know what I mean? So, but really, how much is enough? So how much is enough so I can just walk away from my job? Funny story, started working with someone a few months ago, and he wanted to know if he could retire in May, okay? And this is in November. And I said, yep, Paul, you're all good. You can retire in May. And he was really relieved, okay? So then he calls me the next day and he said, hey, what if I went out on the 1st, on January 1st? I recalculated everything and I said, yep, I think that you're just fine. You know, a few months doesn't make that much of a difference for you. So he calls me a few weeks later, after January 1st, and he said, you know, I walked out. So knowing this, the information that he had from working with me, he felt empowered to walk out because his boss, you know, must have really pissed him off. Okay. So he has enough. He's not rich, but he has enough for what he needs. And I would say in order to learn how much is enough, you need to know how much your cost of living is. And that's why we write down our expenses.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's one thing to work a job just to make money. You know, and that's like a that's always been like my biggest fear in life. Because I remember when I had my son, I kind of came to the conclusion, I'm like, I'm going to be working for the next 40 to 60 years of my life. Like, even if I make a ton of money, like, what am I? I'm gonna work somewhere, yeah, doing something.
That's right. Because and you like what you're doing. You're, yeah, just going to have you're going to have more,
exactly,
security.
Exactly. And that's the money is like, and then what another funny aspect of that is that the few times that I've gotten to, like, I've in just 4 years, I feel like I've lost 20. You know, stressing about money. You know, when you have a child. You know, I was 19 when my son was born, and then all of a sudden, like, all this responsibility is thrust upon you. So it's just kind of been a mad scramble since then. So money, as you can imagine, has always been like a thing. It's always been the forefront of our arguments and like relationships with stress. It's just always there. You know, but it's weird because every time that I've tried to just focus on making money, right? Like my intention, I just want to make more money.
Yeah.
I don't, I lose money. And then whenever I kind of get in the mindset of like, I'm just going to do my job really well, and I'm going to like love showing up to work, and I'm just going to be a good person to be around. Like it's weird because we talk about manifestation a lot, but all of a sudden the phones start ringing. Like I start making more money. But again, I think like for like your example with that guy, it sounds like he just worked 40 years of his life doing something he hated, you know, and like he just couldn't wait to just get the hell out of there, you know. So it's
like that for a lot of people.
That's
what they call measurable insanity.
Yeah,
doing something you hate to buy things.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
to live a certain lifestyle, and that's,
yeah,
what I'm saying.
Well, like, yeah, in my it's funny because I'm delusional in the eyes of a lot of people, like including my own dad to an extent. Like he's coming around. Like the more my mom brings up how his dad was like an entrepreneur his whole life and provided and like took care of his family, the more like I can see him kind of coming around. But again, it's just it's that generation, they were so like famished when like with their finances with the Great Depression that like their whole logic in life is like just make enough money and hold it, you know. Whereas today, like I just my family doesn't need that much money to survive. And like I think if you become an asset and you become resourceful and you become you develop the ability to make money anyway, like we talk about this all the time, like just developing a work ethic. So you can always go make money if you have to. But again, it doesn't like supersede the intelligent move to be smart with your money. You know, I think,
right,
you should have the cake and eat it too in that circumstance,
yeah, you can,
right?
Have it all.
Yeah.
So like imagine this type of framework, right? Whether you win the lottery, okay? But more than likely, you know, 10 years from now, you guys have taken over this whole building. There's a huge sign, right? Inflow, and the parking lot's filled with, and all the lines are perfectly striped out there, you know?
For once.
Yep. So at that point, you have a business that's worth a fortune. You're making huge income. You've been saving and investing the right way. So, you know, 10 plus years from now, you sit back and you say, you know what? I'm going to only work with clients that I love to work with. I'm not going to deal with any pain in the asses. I am going to work a little bit less so I can spend more time with my boy. And I have no worry about financial security. But I'm going to do only things that I want to do. But I'm still going to be training people because that's my why. You know? I look at it the same way.
It's just freedom.
Same exact thing in my industry. If my business is worth, you know, millions of dollars and we have all these, you know, bodies, other advisors running around supporting, what I would do is scale back and work with less people and work less time and be more of an overseer. But I would still do it because my why is to help people make good decisions.
You have you obviously have a gap of like age of the type of people that invest with you, right? As young as,
well, I mean, we helped some people's kids, you know.
Yeah,
so
okay. So you've,
you know,
got that
kids,
started,
yeah.
And then you've got people that were maybe
95,
and
yeah,
and then they were that old back in 2008 when, yeah, you know, that crash came.
The,
are we? Let me ask you something. Like you've got about a 20 year scope that you can look at, like. Are we evolving, or is worry universal? Like, is it always there? Has it always been what it always will be, and it always is? Or are we? Do you see a change generationally, like with the next generation? Do you see?
I often wonder about that. I don't know the answer because we have people that are 24 that are kind of maybe too young to really understand how 2008 or 2001. Or 1987 were and how it felt, or even if you're old enough to remember the headlines or whatever, or even if you were investing in 2008, you just had a couple thousand. You didn't have hundreds of thousands, right? So it's different when you lose a few hundred bucks versus a few hundred thousand. So the question is, now with younger people, right, is it the same human nature? Is it the same?
Yeah.
And I think we'll find ultimately that it is, although I can't say for sure. But I believe that the human nature responds to markets all the same way over the last 200 years. It's just that recently, like you're saying, the last 9, 10 years, post-recession, we haven't had any big drops, so people kind of get forgetful. They kind of forget what it feels like to lose 10% like that.
Right.
Well, we just went through that last month where the Dow went down 12%, so it was a nice rude awakening. And, then it calms down, and then maybe it drops again, or maybe it spikes right back up. But it's this volatility that is maybe caused by computers now, more so than 100 years ago, obviously. But also, who's programming the computers? It's humans, so it has that inherent human nature with the algorithm. Don't forget about that.
Do you worry?
Yeah, I worry about a market meltdown. Absolutely.
Personally?
About money?
Not just, do you worry? Like, I mean, you have a very, it sounds like you have, I would imagine you have a pretty darn sound financial strategy that, again, if peak was gone, you can survive for a little while. Okay, so maybe you don't worry financially. Do you use some of the same blueprinting in other aspects of your life? Do you use the same blueprinting with, how my child's going to develop? You can't control all of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You can't control their influences. You can't control what they see. And you can't control how they spend their time. They're going to play on the iPads, and there's nothing you can do about it, right?
Yeah.
So can we use blueprinting in all of the, in all of our different aspects? I mean, like with our relationships, with our jobs, with our understanding of human nature and the really anything that is touched by a human is extremely uncertain. But like, can our worries become less because we're evolving more consciously? Again, are we, in other words, where the interest rates went to 18% or whatever on a house back in 87, when we had the dip in 8, it didn't bounce like that. It didn't hit people as hard. So are we getting better? So
I plead the fifth, man. I don't know. I think that if you're going through a blueprinting process where you're writing down your values, purpose, vision, mission, and goals, it doesn't have to be money related.
Right.
So the worry, I tend to think about that as money or security. I know that's just me. But I think that if you're aware of these things and you write them down, you're always thinking about it, then you're going to make decisions every day to help make all these things become true. You're manifesting that. I believe that wholeheartedly. So I think that writing it down every year and like evaluating, hey, how does my answers to these questions this year compare to last year or 5 years ago? That's really powerful.
Yeah, I love that. I love that kind of that Kaizen principle with everything.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think it's important that you put the effort towards all the different aspects of your life to cultivate a good life, And if anybody listening, has barely paid their bills, what that stress is like. You know what I mean? Like it does not feel good, and it's something you don't want to deal with. If you've ever had like a health condition, like you know what that's like. You don't want to deal with that. So I think you can attest to this too, Nick. It's like trying to get people to be proactive instead of reactive. It's the same setup. It's like our conventional medicine is just reactive. It's sick care. It's not healthcare. Like we do healthcare. Hospitals do sick care. So you go there when you're dying and when you're old, typically. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. We're trying to get people and make them realize, hey, like, you don't have to deal with that later on in life. So it's kind of the same thing.
I'm going to ask you guys some questions. I know this guy right here, he's way more important than we are, so we're going to get him out of here. But the question is, how much is enough? Okay? Kevin, you're 24 years old. How many years you want to live? How much is enough?
How many years I want to live?
Or no, at what day are you going to wake up? Is that an age? Is that a bank account? Is that a client membership base? When will you actually wake up? Because we all have a little worry, but when will we wake up? Will we ever have a day where we wake up content?
I don't want that.
What's the age?
I don't think it's gonna come. Obviously right now, like I have a 4-year-old, so I want to see that through and make sure that he grows up to be a sound man. I think that's a big worry of mine is like the fear of not being around to guide him, right? So I think we can all attest to that. We have kids.
You want him to be on his own hearing your voice so he makes the good decision when he's alone.
100%, 100%. Yeah. But I don't think – I think it's like complacency's death. You know, I as long as I'm breathing and physically able, like I want to keep getting better. And like that's just what I think makes you fulfilled is like accomplishment in so many different forms keeps that fulfillment coming so you don't become stagnant. I don't think I'll ever get to a point where there's a day where I maybe when I'm on my deathbed and hopefully by that point I am financially secure, my son's a good man, and you know I was good to my wife and I was good to the people around me, and I you know built, you know, I'm not setting out to build a legacy, but it'd be cool if I did. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think when that day comes I'm gonna be okay with it, but I don't think I'll ever get to the point where I'm like, all right, I'm ready to die.
Hoops, do you need Hoops? By the way, that's the nickname for Nick Hopwood is Hoops. Are you content?
No, I always want more. We're always reaching for more, more happiness, more wisdom, more understanding, more money, more clients. You know, more.
You get that
more a greener. You know, I want my yard to be greener. Right.
It's a game. RS Locker. I mean, but so you still have worry. Like you still got unfinished business.
Yeah, like if you lose a client or you see your you know, a budget deficit, if you see your net worth take a hit, if you're not, you know, living up to your standards or whatever the case may be, it's
do you have a percentage that you're not allowed to worry? I mean, think of all this work that you've done, bro. I mean, it's like, but I do think it's funny. I said, if I ever write a book, well, I got to learn how to spell and punctuate really well. But if I ever write a book, like I want to interview homeless people and I want to interview people in retirement homes. And I want to say, hey, what's the most important thing I can take with me? I've said it and I've read it. You know, like we can learn, you know, homeless people sometimes got more figured out than we do. You know what I mean? It's like they have less worry than we do. Now, I don't want to blanket it. They made
some bad decisions to get to where they are, though.
But there's some people that say that they've done it by choice. So it's like it's interesting. Like, what are they experiencing that I'm not? What about those people that run off to Alaska and live off the grid? You know, it's like, you know, they have, like, if you move out to Alaska and live off the grid, like, you have to wake up each day saying, I might get eaten by a bear today. But I'm living life my way.
Well, the stakes are just higher. I mean, like you're. I think it, one way or another, depending on the perception of the person, they're like leveling up. I think there's. If life's just one big game, you can always continue to level up. I mean, there's always ways. You could be the richest man in the world, and you could give back more, or you could still develop a. You could become, you know, obsessed with performance training, and you could get better. There's always. You would have to live a million lives simultaneously to do it all. So I don't think that you. You'll ever arrive. Like, I don't think there's a point where you'll ever arrive.
Coach Ben told me a couple of years ago that I could be 40 and be in the best shape of my life. And that has stuck with me. I got about a year and a half.
Yeah, how do you feel you're doing so far?
My abs could use a little more work.
Well, that growler you just picked up isn't helping.
Well, before I go, though, I got to get a prediction for the tournament. We got Michigan playing tonight.
Who are they playing?
They're playing Texas A&M. I got Michigan by 3, and I got Michigan in the Final Four.
Well, if I'm banking on my bracket, Michigan's going to win it all.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, and I'm in first place in my bracket right now.
I don't really pay attention to basketball, but I'm from Michigan, so I think by nature I'm just going to agree with you guys.
But I have found my flow in that question, because this is what I had to do. Because if Michigan wins it all, I stand to, in the pool that I'm in, it's $20 a guy. It's $20 a guy. I'm like, well, if Michigan loses tonight, which they're playing a really rugged team, if they lose tonight, I'm like, am I devastated that I didn't win the $1,000 pool? Or do I look at it from, it was only $20? You know what I mean? So why is
I would look at it away from the money, because I have such passion.
Passion for University of Michigan.
Yeah, for my team.
Excellent. Well, I mean, I'm really appreciative for your insight and what we're, you know, I guess the point that we never try to make is there is no point. You know, I wanna find flow in and joy in the things that we create, and I wanna find flow and lessons in the things that don't work out the way I've planned them. So the blueprint is a I think it's a wonderful, you know, by the way, Nick Hopwood on his podcast has a wonderful podcast on blueprinting. I think it was an excellent topic. But I just wanted to say personally, I want to have a blueprint. Nick has helped me, and with the help that we have here at Inflow, I am creating blueprints in my relationships. I'm creating blueprints in how I think. I'm creating blueprints in my business. But there is so much uncertainty in life, guys, and I think we'll all agree to that, that I also, I'm hoping that if, you know, what I may have viewed as devastation or yesterday, that I'm also prepared for, you know, life's uncertainties, and I'm almost look at it as a challenge, as a challenge to what can I learn from this. So obviously nothing is a failure. Everything either, you know, either gains or it creates the opportunity to learn something and learn better ways that things work. So, you know, I'm thankful for the topic, and I'm thankful for, I think we have a nice spread of age and a nice, you know, difference in what we do for a living, but it's nice to know that, you know, it's kind of a linear path on progression. In other words, just progress, you know.
There are some good parallels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, either make some money or learn something about it or something. So
they're both necessities. You got to take care of yourself and you got to make money.
Yeah.
Those are the two absolutes in 2018. Like, otherwise you're going to deal with some harsh repercussions and you might be one of those homeless people.
So hopefully this podcast helped people think about, you know, how much is enough for you? You know, what does it mean to live well? What does it mean to live in flow? You know, if you need some more information on blueprinting your health and wellness, come on to see us at Inflow Wellness. And if you need some help on blueprinting your finances and simply just getting a very rational, very calm and reassuring ear, Nick Hopwood at Peak Wealth Management. You got an address for us?
PeakWM.com.
PeakWM.com.
Since you're listening to the podcast, you may want to check out my podcast, which you can just search for in the podcast app, Nick Hopwood, Finding True Wealth.
Or don't.
Anything else?
That's
you
it.
Wanna, you want to leave them with?
Thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks again for tuning in, guys. Just want to give a quick shout to our sponsor, the Inflow Wellness Academy, located in Plymouth, Michigan. Make sure you check them out at inflowacademy.com, on Facebook and YouTube at Inflow Wellness Academy, and Instagram at Inflow Academy. Mention that you're a listener of the Finding Flow podcast and receive some awesome discounts on our exceptional services over at the Inflow Wellness Academy. These services include personal training through semi-private and private. We offer yoga, massage therapy, laser therapy, group classes, just about anything you need to optimize your life. We'll guide you through nutrition. We'll guide you through supplementation. We'll help you build a strong mind and help you achieve a better state of flow on the day-to-day basis. So make sure you check them out. And once again, thanks for tuning in to the Finding Flow podcast.